Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your computer is locked onto our website, kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the unique personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington so special. When the lockdown first hit, we ran a couple of reruns of Our Town episodes because we literally could not use our studio. KPTZ slammed shut in what is usually termed an abundance of caution. Individual DJs have been able to creep into the building and record their show in solitary confinement with the equipment. But those of us who have live guests on their show have not been able to invite them to the studio to record. Needless to say, that put a crimp into our style. But now, with a technological workaround, we record the show without even visiting our world headquarters in a trailer in the parking lot of Mountain View School. It's true that our audio quality is not quite up to our usual standards. It drives the editor of this show, John McPherson, nuts. But the show must go on. So please bear with us if the sound quality isn't quite what we usually deliver. Consider the content. The purpose of Our Town is to share the stories of some of the fascinating people who make up the community. But the show's only a half hour long, which is definitely not long enough to do justice to some of our fellow citizens. So consider it a synopsis. We try to get our guests to talk about their lives, their dreams, how they ended up on the western end of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otter, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. The past few weeks have brought remarkable changes to our county, indeed to the whole country. Now, more than ever, don't you wonder who the people around you really are? Who are those people patiently lining up 6 feet apart in front of the tiny bakery Pandemori? And who was that long-haired guy yelling at the poor staffer at the door of Don's pharmacy the other day? She was trying to explain to him that by order of the governor, he couldn't enter without a mask. Then she was running around the pharmacy picking up items he wanted while he fumed at the front door. I probably would have just snapped at him the classic no shoes, no service. But Don has trained his staff well, and they have a great role model. Did you know that Don himself has been personally delivering some prescriptions in the COVID days? There's that Port Townsend spirit for you. Another example of Port Townsend spirit is here with me today. Chris Nelson, the owner of Sirens, the old whiskey mill, Alchemy, and the In-Between, is a business leader. She headed up the Main Street Association for many years and is an integral part of the business scene. So welcome to the show, Chris.
Thank you.
So I do want to talk about how you and your restaurants and your staff are coping with the pandemic, but I always like to start by letting our listeners know a little bit about the person behind all today's action. So were you born and bred in Port Townsend?
Well, my parents moved here when I was 7. I grew up here, so most of my memories going through school, high school, are all here. I went away to Seattle to go to University of Washington, and when I graduated, I moved back.
So when you were in high school, did you hang out with any particular crowd? What sort of high schooler were you?
Oh, geez. I don't know. I went to OPEPO for many years, which is an alternative school. So when we went back into the normal school system, I really didn't totally understand the concepts of the cliques and exactly who you were supposed to be and how. So I'm not sure that I really subscribed to any particular group. I was in some of the plays. I took dance. I worked a lot. I had jobs since I was 14.
So I don't really know much about that alternative school. Is it still around?
Yeah, OPEPO. Mm-hmm. It was a great school. We went back into the system and most of us were either very advanced for the grades that we were put back in and or almost a whole year ahead.
Did you want to go there or did your parents think it was the best for you?
My parents thought that it would be great. We moved to Port Townsend and I went to regular school for a year, and they really wanted me to have the opportunity to go to an alternative school and all the offerings that it had. It was a really, really wonderful experience. You learned how to think for yourself, how to learn in different ways, how to help younger kids, listen to older kids, really how to integrate with all sorts of different people. Of course, I wouldn't really know any other way, but it wasn't a traditional classroom. So that I thought was really nice as well.
It sounds like a good preparation for life, being able to cope with all sorts of different situations.
Right. I totally think that's true.
So you mentioned you started working some jobs when you were around 14. What sort of jobs?
Food service jobs. I've always had food service jobs. I worked at the Burger Works, which is now where Windermere Real Estate was. First the cashier, and then I was a cook. I worked at Sea Galley, both in the kitchen, but mostly in the front, busing and then waiting tables. I worked at Bread and Roses for ages, where Courtyard Cafe is now, and right. Was really one of the only coffee places in town. You knew what everybody wanted to drink and what they had and what was going on. And
that sounds good. Now, when you went to UW, what did you major in?
I majored in international finance.
Didn't you tell me you started out in engineering?
Well, I decided, since I was a very decisive person, I decided that I was going to go and be an engineer until I got to college and started taking some of the broad engineering classes and realized that I didn't want to be an engineer at all. I loved math. And so somebody suggested I should go into engineering because I was always very good at and really enjoyed math, but I really did not like engineering all that well. So I sort of fumbled around taking lots of math classes and science classes and things that I enjoyed. And not until I found economics class, which was numbers meets human behavior, then I suddenly was like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I want to do. And it had everything to do with life and people, but it was all numbers based. And that was it for me. I just thought that was the greatest thing ever.
What did you think you were going to do when you got out of college?
Nothing. I didn't really have a perfect plan. All my friends were going off to get master's degrees in things. I couldn't figure out what I would really want to get a master's degree in. So I decided I would join the Peace Corps because that sounded like a good idea. And all I really wanted was to travel and explore the world. So I got a placement, but I really wanted to go to Africa. And they didn't really want economists in Africa. So Russia had just, or the USSR had just broken up at the time, and they placed me in some country I'd never heard of. So I said, no way, I don't want to go there. They said it would probably take a year to get a new placement, and I thought that was fine. So I decided that I would wait a year and I would just go travel myself. That I did. I went and traveled and realized, oh, I could do this. I can travel myself. I can get myself around. This is really fantastic. And I get to explore so many places and things. And then traveling, I was totally hooked.
Yes, but obviously traveling takes money. And at some point, you probably had to consider where the money was going to come from.
Right. That is very, very true. So I got a job managing some of the food services because now I'm 22 and I have a degree in international finance, not that that has anything to do with food service, but I'd been working in restaurants since I was 14. Community Enterprises was looking for a 6 month of the year food service contractor that would come and manage a bunch of the food services out at Fort Warden State Park and then be off 6 months of the year. They interviewed me and gave me this job, which of course, in hindsight, I was seriously not qualified for. I didn't think I was qualified at the time, but boy, was I determined to do a great job. So it was a 6 month contract and I would work 80 hours a week as hard as I could, learning everything I needed to learn. And I did that for 5 years and then I was able to go travel.
So where did you go every year? Did you go to the same place or did you vary it?
Never. I would pick a continent. I would pick where I was going to fly into, where I was going to fly out of 4 or 5 months later, a loose itinerary, and off I would go. And of course, I didn't have very much money, so I spent most of my time on local buses, local trains, staying in local hotels or hostels. So I really got to spend wonderful time experiencing the culture and the customs and the people of many different countries and places.
Can you give us an example of one of those jaunts?
I bought a ticket to go to all the islands across the South Pacific and New Zealand and Australia. I guess I started in Hawaii and then went French Polynesia and then the Cook Islands and Tonga. then Fiji, and then down to New Zealand, North and South Island, and then the center and eastern half of Australia. So you'd spend at least a month on each island. You just get to know the island.
Sounds great. So that lasted 5 years. Why did you not continue longer than that? Sounds like a great gig.
It was a great gig. And in hindsight, I don't know what I was thinking. Sirens, which was a little teeny one-room beer and wine place with a couple of appetizers that I just loved. It had opened a year or two before. It was not succeeding. For some reason, I didn't actually stop and think about my lifestyle choice change. Like, I am no longer going to be able to be gone for half the year. I didn't think about any of those things. I just saw an opportunity and I knew that it was just the right thing for me and I knew I could do it. I was just so certain and I never looked back. It was just like, this is what I want to do. This is how I want it to be.
Makes sense. Did you have any partners?
The first time I had Sirens, I did. I convinced my boyfriend at the time to buy 25% of the bar and I bought 75%. And that very quickly did not work out very well. He was not inclined to sell me his 25%. So in the end, because I didn't want to go through legal battles and other really negative things, I opted to sell him my 75% and buy the Fountain Cafe instead.
Uh-huh. And how long did you have the Fountain Cafe?
Well, in total, I had the Fountain Cafe for 8 years and poured myself into that restaurant. A couple of years later, I got Sirens back. So
it was two restaurants.
Well, I had one and then I went to three the same week. Actually, I had made a deal to buy Giordini's, which was a sandwich shop next door to the Fountain. So I'd made that deal. Then I got Sirens back literally at the same time, like the same week. So I went from one to three in
That's
one
sort
week.
Of overwhelming.
And it was beyond overwhelming, actually. Yeah. But I did that for 4.5 years or so. I did all three of them and it was too much, too hard. I didn't have a team of people to work with as much because I was newer in business. It was really hard. It was really exhausting. And I knew somewhere along the way, I'm not succeeding. I feel like I can't get to the bottom of my list every day. I am giving up things that I treasure in my life. So I decided that I would sell two of them and keep one. I kept Sirens and I sold the Fountain and I sold Giordini's. And then for 5 years, I just had one and that was Sirens. And that's, I spent a lot of time working on Sirens and a lot of the improvements and changes and menu and everything all happened during that time when I had energy and the time and the excitement and focus of just having one job instead of many, many jobs.
But now you have four restaurants.
Right.
How did that happen?
After I had Sirens for about 5 years, I really was missing my love of finer foods and wines. I've traveled a lot. I was really wanting to put together a menu that was more international and had a lot of the old world European dishes, just interesting influences from around the world. And I didn't feel like we had that in town, plus my love of international wines and different undiscovered and unpopular wine regions and good representations from those areas. So I really wanted to open something that really represented my love of food and wine. That's when I decided to open Alchemy. And then I had just the two of them. So Alchemy is 10 or 11, maybe even 12 now. I'm sorry to say that I do not keep track.
It blends.
Maybe that's not very good. You know, it's like they're my children. They're my part of my soul, and I can't remember what they're. The Whiskey Mill was just a really neat opportunity. The landlord was looking for a new tenant, and I thought, you know what I really have wanted is Sirens Food, which is like our dedication and love of great pub fare. We use all fresh beef. We bother to make every single sauce, every subtlety and detail we make. It's pub fare, but it's special. And I really wanted to do that in a family-friendly environment. Because Sirens is 21 and over only. So the Whiskey Mill came about from that and a really neat opportunity to actually bring that level of really great pub fare to everyone and families and other groups. A lot of small batch whiskeys and distilleries are coming out all over the US and internationally. We really wanted to focus on that. It just add a neat dynamic and some of the things that are not, again, offered in town, but for the local people to be able to explore those flavors and those things.
Right. Well, now you're a great believer that restaurants should have their own personality, and you just sort of told us what the personality of Sirens and of the Old Whiskey Mill are. But what about Alchemy and the In Between, which is the newest baby? So tell me, what are their personalities?
Alchemy is finer dining. I don't like the word fine dining. Finer dining, meaning we spend more time working with farms and sourcing top of the line ingredients. So it's finer foods and finer ingredients. But Alchemy, I would say, really is a dedication to a lot of the Northwest ingredients and components that we can get, but really with a passion toward some of the old world cuisine that you find a lot in Europe, as well as the international flavors of the chimichurris from South America, and now some of the North African and other spices and flavors that are from around the world. So it's really international cuisine, but in a way that it's flavors from around the world all brought together for you to sample and to try. And we have bites menu and a whole menu. And I just keep trying to explore things. We're putting our whole grilled fish on the menu because that's something that is normal in every other country, is the whole fish. Here, we're afraid of the whole fish. So just things that in international cuisine are just delightful. And I want the people from here to have access to those.
Some of our listeners might not have even discovered the In-Between because it is really sort of obscurely in between. So explain it to us.
So the In-Between is a speakeasy-esque fine craft cocktails. It comes from a lot of the bars that I've been to in New York, as well as in a lot of major cities around the world. They have really neat little speakeasy, but speakeasy makes it somehow like you're heading toward a specific era of cocktails. The concept is to go in, you find it, it's a little treasure, it's timeless. You're drinking incredible ingredients put together with great care in an atmosphere that you know you are not in the current day. You are somewhere in the past, but you don't know exactly where. It just has an incredible timeless feel. And that was the goal on that one. I actually originally had designed it in a different space because I own Sirens building. And so I spend a lot of time in the little nooks and crannies of the building. And I'd actually originally designed it over in another space, but it was a little bit too hard to find. Finally, I opted to move it to the space it is now, but that space was twice as big. So my dad and I sat there moving walls on paper and trying to figure out how to make that work out. The design that it is now was me standing in the space for long periods of time trying to figure out exactly how to build some walls to make it smaller and feel really intimate.
Well, for those of you who haven't discovered the In-Between, it literally is halfway up the stairs to Sirens. There's a little bit of a landing, and if you're heading up, you look to your right, there's a little door, and you may find it. You're listening to KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. The show's called Our Town. I'm your host, Maryam McNellis. Our Town profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work on the Olympic Peninsula. My guest today, Chris Nelson, who, as you've just heard, is the owner of four restaurants and bars around Port Townsend. We've been talking about her life and her concepts for her properties and how hard she's worked to bring them to where they are. But this is the days of the pandemic, and she, like everyone else, was shut down. You told me the other day that you were actually in the Philippines in February, and you knew what was coming. Tell us about that, and then tell us about your insights when you first came back.
There in January and February, it was very real. People were wearing masks. To check into a hotel, you had to get your temperature taken. If not, they turned you in if your temperature was too high. It was very real. It wasn't like a fleeting thought. It was happening. When I flew home, everybody had almost not heard of it. It was something else. It was happening somewhere else. So I was surprised at how sure we were that it was a problem elsewhere and not here. As it started to become more and more public, the news started covering it more and more, and we started getting a few cases, we could see the numbers declining before there was ever really any official statements made about what was going on. There was just a lot of concern and nobody knowing what to do. At Alchemy, we actually separated all of our tables pre-closure because we'd heard that distance was a key to success and to try to make it feel a little bit safer and more manageable. There was no 6-foot thing at the time. I think we probably separated the tables by some 6 feet, but some 5 feet, because again, there was no official statements at that time, but we could still see the numbers declining as people were starting to get a little more cautious and not know what to do. So they were trepidatious to go out, and understandably so.
The order to shut down was actually March 17th.
Yep.
What happened? How many employees did you have when that hit?
I had 78 employees. I laid off 40 and then kept the rest of them on mostly quarter time. We shut the in-between altogether and then decided to try to do TACO at the other three, but that really only takes a person here and there. We had only a couple of people stay on mostly full-time, literally only a couple. Then the rest of everybody were at about 25% of their normal hours for a while. I spent a lot of time going to seminars, trying to figure out what nationally people were doing and statewide what the restaurants were doing. I spent a lot of time trying to get my staff on unemployment. I spent days, as did Amber, one of my managers. We would come in with our laptops and try to figure out how to get people on unemployment. It was horrible and tragic because these are my family members. I spend all my time with them, and now I can't provide a job for them because we don't have business. As easy as they were portraying getting on unemployment, it was really, really difficult for many people. Now, a few people, it was great and it worked out. And I was like, phew, okay, a few I don't have to worry about. But many, it was really, really difficult. So I spent a lot of time trying to understand the unemployment system, how to make it work, what are they looking for, what are the stumbling blocks, writing tons of letters. Then when everything would be fine, this person over here who's never had a problem suddenly would get kicked off and we'd have to figure out how to get them back on. It was exhausting, and not so fun, and really tragic.
Yeah, it seems that way. It also seems that now that we're sort of stepping into reopening, there are rather a bewildering number of rules. Can you explain some of the hoops that restaurants are having to go through?
Well, we have 19 new rules. Obviously, the spacing and the distancing or screening and separating everyone is the most obvious rule that everybody can see. Say masking and hand sanitizing, those are things that you can see and the customers are aware of. You can only use a disposable menu. So we put our menus on poster boards, trying to reduce that quantity of waste or recycling. The way you clean the table needs to be different. What you touch and where you have to hand sanitize or wash your hands, very, very different. All my staff has to take their temperature. You had to have some sort of health screening. So temperature seems to be one of the easiest gauges. So everybody has to get their temperature taken at the beginning of their shift, in the middle of their shift. They need to stand back from the tables. You might notice that the server no longer really comes close except for a few moments because they're actually given the health and safety standard says more than 15 minutes of contact is more dangerous for them. So they need to stand back more and ask you if you want a drink, but not interface so much and do a little bit less pre-bussing, like picking up a plate here and there. And when you go to the table, make sure you're grabbing multiple things and interacting with them and then back away again. It's really quite a bit different, but we're trying to be subtle about it. And sometimes it doesn't work out. And sometimes you don't really notice. And so that's good.
Did the takeout part of it work from the beginning or is it a slow start? What happened?
Well, for us, takeout was very slow at the beginning. And I think locally, people realized that the restaurants really were not going to make it if people didn't start getting takeout. Not for the sake of them being hungry. People know that they can cook their own food at home, but people, I think, really rallied around it. And that was really nice. You know, we went from it really not being successful to people really coming and checking in and making sure the staff was okay, even though there was only a couple people there and really wanting us to succeed. And that felt really good and was also inspiring to get through takeout, which was a money losing venture. And every day we were open, we lost money. But it was really inspiring to work through something where the community was really right there and wanting us to succeed and doing what they could to help.
As we're recording this, you're at a limited opening, I guess I call it. How many people or customers can you have at any one time?
It's a capacity thing. So we can have 50% of our normal capacity. actually working out reasonably well. It's not sustainable for a long term, but it's sustainable for now. Right now is summer. We should be actually increasing. We spent all our reserves. I guess I shouldn't say we, because that would be representing anyone but myself, but I spent my reserves trying to survive through this until now. It's going okay. It's nice to see the change. It's nice to see the people. It's nice to see the local people supporting the restaurants and being out and about. And I think more locals should wear your mask, check out a couple of your favorite restaurants and see what they're doing and see if you're comfortable enough to sit outside at the restaurant and show your support. Because a lot of them are doing a really good job.
Any listener who hasn't noticed, the city of Port Townsend has been most generous in allowing restaurants to really spread out into the street. There are lots of nice setups. And in these beautiful summer days, when we have beautiful summer days, it's great to sit out and partake after we've all been locked away for so long. I hate to be a downer, but we both know that winter will come. Any thoughts on how that might be?
I am an eternal optimist, even though I am a realist as well. The governor just spoke with that yesterday, and he was not very optimistic, which was a little bit disheartening, and I get that. I feel a little bit sad because Jefferson County has done an exemplary job at following the rules, at masking, at hand sanitizing, and our rates are showing that we're doing a good job. And so it's a little bit heartbreaking to me to see other counties and their mismanagement of the rules and how that is going to negatively impact the rest of us. It seems a little bit unfair, but I understand. It's hard for me to imagine without the good weather. And again, we don't have good weather for very long. It's hard for me to imagine what this winter is going to look like. It doesn't look so positive. So I guess I'm trying to focus on as many people eating outside as possible.
Okay. When we talked the other day, you said something that really caught my attention. Here's what it was. You said, I want to focus on how to succeed, not on whether to succeed. Fair. And I thought that was really good. And we are really seriously out of time. So I want to thank you for being on the show. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today has been Chris Nelson, owner of four restaurants here, Sirens, the Old Whiskey Mill, Alchemy, and the In-Between. As she said, she's an eternal optimist, and she's got lots of tables outside. The weather is good. I would encourage our listeners to go to her restaurants, go to any of our other local restaurants, because Lord knows we want them to continue. In addition to thanking Chris, I want to thank my partner, John McPherson, the editor and producer of Our Town. Normally, he sits in a glass booth with microphones, computers, and lots of other stuff. But that's not what's happening today. He's not even inside our locked fortress of a studio. He's hidden far away, but he will still manage to distill what we are talking about so we sound ever so good and aren't stumbling and mumbling. In an abundance of caution, we're not able to use our usual equipment, but we are back to renovating a building at Fort Worden where KPTZ will be moving. We're looking forward to having new space and emerging from the COVID spring, summer, and let's hope not fall and winter. So listeners, stay safe and stay healthy. I'm signing off for today, but please keep listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.